Thank you for downloading the East Haven Podcast. For more information about our church, please visit easthavenchurch.org. Now, please join Pastor Kevin Reiser as he brings us this week's message.
If you brought your text with you this morning, find John chapter 14. We're going to look at one verse today, and that's just verse 27. It's a powerful verse. Last week we talked about Christmas presents, not P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, but Christmas presents, like the presence of Christ. Today we're going to talk about Christmas peace, and John chapter 14, verse 27 is a powerful passage that helps us understand this concept. The year was 2004. A distraught mother named Luana Miller, daughter, had been abducted a couple years prior. Luana Miller had worked with the police and had worked with FBI and had worked with local officials in order to find her abducted daughter, but to no avail. And so the case went cold. And so out of desperation and out of the heart of a saddened mom, she contacted a man named Montel Williams. Now, Montel Williams used to have a talk show that played in the afternoon, kind of like the Ellen Show or the Oprah Show or the Sally Jesse Raphael Show or the Jenny Jones Show or the Ricky Lake Show. The list, the Maury Povich, the list is long and undistinguishable, but Montel Williams was one of these kind of guys. So she contacted him and she said, basically, she'd seen a psychic on his show in the past, and she said, I need to sit down with this psychic, and I need to see if this psychic can connect with the spirit of my daughter. So Luana Miller, in 2004, goes on the Montel Williams show, sits down with the psychic. The psychic's name is Sylvia Brown, and I use that word psychic loosely. You understand that, right? And so Sylvia Brown is going to perform this reading and see if she can't connect to the spirit of Luana Miller's daughter. The psychic, Miss Brown, is very tender-hearted. She's very compassionate and very empathetic with Luana Miller's plight. But in the midst of the reading, she reaches across the table and she takes Luana Miller's hands and she said, Luana, I'm sorry to tell you this, but your daughter is dead. And, of course, Luana Miller, as any mother would, collapses in an emotional heap, begins to cry uncontrollably. Not long after she left the Montel Williams show, she was diagnosed, was Miss Miller, with cancer. Luana Miller died in 2006 from cancer-related issues. And she went to her grave believing the words of Sylvia Brown, the psychic, your daughter is dead. Fast forward 7 years from her death, there's a 911 call that comes into the Cleveland, Ohio Police Department. On the other end of the phone is this shaky and energetic voice saying, my name is Amanda Berry, and I was abducted 10 years ago and have been held prisoner ever since. Please, please, somebody come and save me. You remember seeing the story unfold before our very eyes as the police arrived and showed the horrors of not one, not two, but three women who had been abducted and were living in the same household that Amanda Berry was living in. Amanda Berry was the daughter of Luana Miller. And somebody in the media remembered the Montel Williams show and they found the psychic Sylvia Brown. And they confronted Sylvia Brown with this question. You told Amanda Berry's mother that Amanda was dead. How can you justify what you did and the way you did it? She looked at the reporter and said these words, only God is right 100% of the time. Now, I don't give any stock to psychics or tarot card readers or any of those quack doodles, but I do agree with Sylvia Brown on that point. Only God is right 100% of the time. And because He is right 100% of the time, He can be trusted. And I want you to know this morning, He can bring you Christmas peace even in the midst of this ridiculous world in which we live. The world's on fire and it burns with greater intensity every single day, it seems like. If you turned your news on last night, you saw that two police officers were assassinated, gangster style, sitting in their police car performing drills just because they were cops. The world's gone crazy. And we sing songs that talk about this peace at the holiday time. And perhaps the most poignant song is Hate is Strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Is it possible to have Christmas peace, even amidst the trouble? Even in the midst of the chaos, even in the midst of the world that seems to be burning all around us. Jesus says these words in John chapter 14. John 14, verse 27, Jesus says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give. I give it to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." You see, there's an interesting thing that happens between the Old Testament and the New Testament. In the Old Testament, God's children are described as God's children. And that's a wonderful thing to be one of God's children. The problem is that in the Old Testament, God treats His children like we treat our children. And He says, look, these are the rules you have to follow. And if you follow these rules, these are the blessings that I'm going to give you. If you don't follow these rules, then there will be punishment, there will be consequence. And so they'd follow the rules, and then they wouldn't, and then God rescued them, and then they'd follow the rules, and then they wouldn't, and God rescued them. In the Old Testament, God said, look, I've set all this up, and I've given you all these instructions. The New Testament calls it the law. I've given you the law because the law tells you how you should live. Do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, and you shall live. This is what you should do. Then Jesus comes along. You see the table represented here. We're going to remember the sacrifice that Jesus made. There's crackers on there that represents His broken body, which took our sin upon us. There's juice in there, which represents the blood that He spilled. And that tells us, in Jesus' own words, that this is the new covenant. We're passing from from Old Testament law to New Testament grace. And Jesus says that you're still God's children. But because of what I'm going to do on the cross, you're being promoted inside the ranks of being God's children to no longer simply His children, but now you're His heirs. And there's a huge difference between being a child that says, look, you have to follow all these rules or I'm going to punish you, to being God's heirs, which says, now you get to live in grace. All of the sudden, the rules take on a different tone. In the Old Testament, it said, you should tithe. You should give 10% of your income. In the New Testament, Jesus says, you could give generously. In the Old Testament, it said you should go to the temple and find God's presence there. In the New Testament, Jesus says, you could believe the fact that, lo, I am with you always, even to the ends of the age. You see the difference between the two? The Old Testament's all about what you should do. The New Testament's all about what you could do. And it opens up all kinds of doors of opportunity. And one of the things that we could do as a result of being heirs of Jesus Christ is we could live with peace in our heart. Jesus Himself says, you're heirs, and I give you peace. Not as the world gives, but as I give. I give it to you. That's the difference between Old Testament and New Testament. The book of Titus says that we have been justified by His grace. And when we have been justified by His grace, we might become heirs of His, having the hope of eternal life. No longer just a child among many. Now I'm an heir. I'm a recipient of the estate. It takes us to a different level. In John chapter 14, Jesus tells us five specific things that we can let sear into our heart and help us understand this holiday season, this time of Christmas, that we can have Christmas peace. The first thing Jesus tells us is Jesus tells us that peace is part of our earthly inheritance. We seem to think that, yeah, I know, Pastor Kevin, I'm going to get peace, but I have to wait until I die. And once I'm dead, then I'm finally going to be at rest, and you're going to put R.I.P. on my tombstone, and I will be resting in peace, and then I can have it. It's not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, you are my heir. And because you're my heir, and because of what I've done on the cross, because there's a new covenant now, you get my peace. We seem to think that peace is absence of war. We think that peace is absence of conflict. We think that peace is absence from struggle. Jesus tells us just the opposite. He said, look, in this life you will have trouble, but you can still be at peace. Jesus says there is always going to be wars and rumors of wars, but you can still have peace because peace is part of our earthly inheritance. It is the gift of Christ because of His reconciliation. It is the tranquility of our mind that comes out of a sense that our sins have been forgiven. It is a spiritual comfort knowing that we have been divinely pardoned and that our sins have been covered by His blood. It is a calmness of heart because we're trusting in God's provision, not our own. It is the stillness of spirit, trusting that God will protect us in whatever the situation may be. It is the silence of the soul, knowing with assurance that someday, yes, we will rest in Luke chapter 2. The angels came and they said these words, glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace, goodwill towards men. It didn't mean the absence of war. It meant peace in your heart so that you could live at peace with other men. Jesus tells us peace is part of our earthly inheritance. You can have Christmas peace while you're still alive. It's a wonderful thing to think about. Secondly, Jesus identifies himself as the provider of peace. If you look at that verse, he says, "Peace I give to you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives it do I give to you." Over and over and over again, he says, look, the peace comes from me. We think that if we have the fat enough bank account that we're going to be at peace. We think if we have the small enough thigh gap, we're going to be at peace. We seem to think that if we have the right wardrobe, we're going to be at peace. We seem to think that if we go to the right school, we're going to be in peace. We seem to think if we have the trophy husband or the trophy wife, we're going to be at peace. No. Jesus says, it's my peace that I give, and I give it to you. It's not contingent on your wardrobe or your bank account or your thigh gap or your muscles or your beauty. It is contingent on him and him alone. It is my peace, Jesus says, and I give it to you. It's part of my gift package. Let's break it down a little further. We know that we have his peace because he is the provider for the needy. He is the provider for the needy. Philippians chapter 4, 19 says, my God will meet how many of your needs? All, according to his riches in glory. How rich is God in glory? You don't have a calculator that can go that high. That's how rich he is in glory. And he says, through me, God can provide all of those things. Where we get messed up is we think that means we're going to get a fat bank account. And we have preachers telling us that we're going to get a fat bank account. Peace has nothing to do with the size of your bank account. It has everything to do with the provision of your needs. And Jesus will make sure that his children have their needs taken care of. It's hard for us to believe sometimes. We also understand that peace comes because he is an enabler of the weak. I told you several weeks ago that the best thing you have to bring to Jesus is your weakness. The best thing you have, the only thing of any value that you have to bring into his presence is your absolute weakness. Paul tells us that anything you try to bring to Jesus that you think is of any value turns out to be only filthy rags. The best righteousness you have to offer is only filthy rags. And so we come to Jesus' presence, and we come to Jesus' presence because he is the enabler of those who are weak. Earlier in the passage that we just read in Philippians chapter 4, Paul tells us that we can do some things through him who gives me strength. Is that what he says? No, Paul says we can do what through him who gives us strength? All things. What? I can do all things? You mean I can actually find this place of peace? Yes, you can. You mean I can actually share my mission story? Yes, you can. You mean I can actually be a generous giver and give more than 10%? Yes, you can. But you can't do it in your own strength, and you can't do it using your own math, and you can't do it using your own words. You bring your weakness to Jesus. I'm too weak to tell my story, so you tell it through me. I'm too weak to be a generous giver, so you give through me. I'm too weak to be the right kind of husband, so you be the right kind of husband through me. I'm too weak to be the right kind of wife, so you be the right kind of wife through me. I'm too weak to be an obedient child, so you be obedient through me. We bring him our weakness, and we tell him, I can't, but I believe that you can. He enables the weak. Third, he is an advocate of believers to the Father. Oh, I love this. He is an advocate of the believers to the Father. 1 John chapter 2. My dear children, I am writing this to you so that you will not sin. But if anybody does sin, we have one who speaks to the Father in our defense. It is Jesus Christ, for he is the righteous one. Let's just take a quick survey this morning. Any sinners in the building today? See a show of hands. That's pretty much unanimous. Those of you that didn't raise your hands are liars. We know that lying's a sin. So join the club, will you? Do you understand the magnitude of this passage in 1 John? I'm writing this to you so that you can stay away from sin. But if somebody among you does sin, there is somebody named Jesus Christ who goes to the Heavenly Father on your behalf and says exactly what he did for me. So when I'm thinking evil thoughts or looking at lustful things or saying hurtful things to my children or thinking bad about my neighbors or wrestling with issues of racism in my own heart, whatever happens to be going on inside of me, and I recognize that I'm making bad choices with my mind. Jesus said, if you're making bad choices with your mind, you might as well be making bad choices with your body, because it's exactly the same. So when I realize I'm making bad choices with my mind, I bow my head and I tell Jesus, making bad choices with my mind. And Jesus goes, I'm going to be your advocate. And so what Jesus does is he goes to his father, who's sitting on his throne. He goes, God, Kevin's at it again. He's being an idiot. You know that. And because you're holy, you have every right to punish him. But on October 22nd, 1984, Kevin came to me in a moment of desperation, and he confessed to me that he was a sinner. And he told me that he needed my blood to cover his sin, and that he believed in me, and that he believed in the death that I died on the cross so that his sins could be forgiven. God, I know he's being an idiot, but because I'm his advocate, because I kept my promise to him, because I covered his sins, both past, present, and also future, he's not subject to your wrath. He's not subject to your condemnation, because there is no condemnation for those who are in me. And Father, I'm telling you, he's in me. And so I'm asking you, because of his belief in me, that you'll make his sin forgiven. You see, he's my advocate. He goes to God on my behalf, because I'm an idiot. I'm a sinner. And Jesus died to cover those sins, past, present, and future. And not only does he cover those sins, past, present, and future, but he goes to the Father on my behalf and says, hey, I've already taken his sin. Therefore, no condemnation exists upon him. You understand the power and the magnitude of that moment? He's your advocate. He's also the compassionate counselor. Isaiah chapter 9 says, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulders. And he shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Not just mediocre counselor, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. I have a friend that I've been trying to lead to the Lord for years now. She is a counselor, but the reason she's a counselor is because she lost her first career. And as I tell you her story, you're going to understand that her life has been ridiculously hard. She was a working runway model in New York City. Tall, long legs, beautiful physique by worldly standards. One day she was leaving a runway show, and they were doing some construction on some of the streets in New York City. And there was a cement truck on the side where she was driving. And that cement truck decided to change lanes. And when that cement truck decided to change lanes, the only thing she could do was to swerve to avoid being hit by the cement truck. When she did, she ran her car into the front end of a bulldozer doing road construction. The blade of that bulldozer went through the windshield of that car and caught her right across her supermodel face. Immediately taken to the hospital, they immediately did reconstructive surgery. They put her bones back together. They got her face all stitched back up. And she went through years of plastic surgery. But the modeling world's cruel, and she was no longer accepted in the modeling community. Her identity was gone. She believed she had a good way with people, and so she went to New York University, got her degree in counseling, married a man, moved to Houston, started a very good practice here in town. Her and her husband had a son. The son was born with muscular dystrophy. He died at the age of 19. She had a beautiful daughter who was also doing modeling work in Austin, Texas. Her daughter was a helper. Had a kind heart, sweet disposition, rescued every stray puppy, rescued every homeless cat, dated the boys that were damaged and broken and thought that she could bring them back to a place of stability and normalcy. And it proved to be too much for her. For instead of being able to bring the last boyfriend up out of the despair that he was in and able to help him through his drug addiction, she herself became addicted to drugs, died of a heroin overdose in 2007. Last year, she went home to the Northeast, to New England, to visit with family for the holidays. On Christmas Day, she was going to call her husband. Couldn't get him on the phone. She called the superintendent of the apartment complex that they lived in downtown. The superintendent goes in to check on her husband, only to find out that he's had a massive heart attack and has died in his bed alone. My friend lost her beauty and lost her career and lost her son and lost her daughter and lost her husband. And she called me 2 weeks ago. And in all these years I've been trying to lead her to Jesus, she says, I need a favor from you. You name it. Said, I'm lonely. Would you be able to call me once a week or so and just talk to me? I'm like, you know I can do that. Said, I'm going to pray for you too. She said, I've even been trying to pray. I'm like, how's that going? It's hard. You know I don't believe in your God. I'm like, I know you don't. But there's something in there that's driving you to call me, and there's something in there that's moving you to pray. I said, I need you to know that the God that I know is a wonderful counselor, and he will be that for you. He won't restore your family. He won't raise people from the dead, but he can help your hurting heart. Talked to her yesterday, day before yesterday. Going to go back to the Northeast, spend Christmas with her family. But she's on the verge of understanding what it means to have a God who is a wonderful counselor. Isaiah doesn't stop there, though. He says he is a wonderful counselor, but he is also a mighty God. Not a weak, milquetoast, sissy, wah-wah God, a mighty God. He's an everlasting Father. He's a prince. He's a compassionate counselor. Finally, we also understand that Jesus is an everlasting God. Isaiah touches on this. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 8 says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. When my friend's face hit the bulldozer blade, Jesus Christ was the same as he's always been. When my friend lost her son, Jesus is the same that he's always been. When my friend lost her daughter, Jesus is the same that he's always been. When my friend lost her husband, Jesus is the same as he's always been. Jesus is patiently waiting for her to discover that he is the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Pray for my friend as I pray for my friend. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 14, Paul says, "For he himself is our peace. He has made the two one and has destroyed the barrier of the dividing wall of hostility." Again, I go back to the advocate statement. There's a barrier that exists between me and God, and until I find the fact that Jesus Christ is the Prince of Peace, there's hostility between God and myself. He separates the barrier. He breaks down the wall. He allows me to be okay in God's presence. He is the destroyer of the barrier. I don't care how big your bank account gets, you're not going to be at peace. I don't care how thin your thigh gap is, you're not going to be at peace. I don't care how handsome and how bulky your muscles are, you're not going to be at peace. I don't care what neighborhood you live in. I don't care how your football team's doing. You are never going to be at peace until you understand that Jesus and Jesus alone is our peace. This is what Mary understood that Martha didn't in the story of Mary and Martha. Martha thought if the table was prepared and if the food was yummy and if everybody was wowed by her hospitality and if everybody went, ooh, ah, when they walk in and saw the decorations, then she would be at peace. What'd Mary do? Mary did nothing. Mary walked in, she sat down in the front row in the presence of Jesus, and she went. She was at peace because she wanted to be with Jesus and Jesus wanted to be with Mary. Jesus also wanted to be with Martha, but he told Martha, "Martha, you're distracted by many things." You cannot find peace outside of Jesus. It's just not possible. The third thing Jesus makes here is as his heir, Jesus makes me the recipient of that peace. "My peace I give to you," he said. "It's yours. It's your peace. Reach out and take it. Believe in me. Reach out and accept it. It's your peace. I'm giving it to you." There's a fourth thing Jesus promises when we're his heir. That is, Jesus promises peace that is not what we expect. It's not what we expect. I've touched on this pretty heavy already. The world has its certain ideas of what you have to have in order to have peace. And Jesus says, none of these things make a difference. That's what the world says you have to have in order to have peace. Jesus says, for you in order to have peace, all you need is me. That's it. And that blows our minds because we still live in the Old Testament concept of I got to do this and I got to do that and I got to do this and I got to do that. There's all these things that the Old Testament tells me I should do. The New Testament says it's not about what you should do. If you want the peace of Jesus, you could just choose to live consciously every moment in His presence. Do you understand my schedule is hectic? Do you understand my kids drive me crazy? Do you understand the traffic that is developed in the town in which I live? Yeah, he understands all that. But he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. It doesn't bother him. He knows your schedule. He knows your lifestyle. He knows the traffic. And yet he says, all I really want you to do is take a few deep breaths, come sit in the front row, because I really want to be with you. And the reason I want to be with you is because I'm crazy about you. I just want you to be crazy about me too. The fifth thing we have, and this is one of my favorites, Jesus promises that he's got this. Jesus promises that he's got this. Doesn't matter what your financial situation is, Jesus has got this. Doesn't matter what your marriage is like, Jesus has got this. Oh good, Jesus is going to save my marriage. That's not what I said. What I said is Jesus has got this. You guys know that I had sleeve gastrectomy surgery back in August. Doing pretty decent, I think. But I have to tell myself every single day, Jesus, I need you to have this. Because while the pounds are coming off and the belt's tightening up and I'm having to go to wearing suspenders with my blue jeans because my pants are falling down and you do not want that to happen, every time I sit down at the table or every time I go to dinner with friends, they bring back their big fat plates of succulent whatevers. It doesn't matter. I grieve. I have lost the love of my life. And I don't mean Debbie. I mean my food. And so I sit there and I look at that sad little amount on that plate. I'm like, Jesus, you got to have this. You've got to take away the emotional struggle that I feel. And I stand before you this morning as a living testimony that His grace is, do I miss it? I miss it a lot. But so far, I go to bed comfortably at night knowing that Jesus got this. That just happens to be my current struggle. I don't know what your current struggle is. But if Jesus has my appetite and I know He's got this, then whatever you're dealing with, I know Jesus has got, because that's who He is. He came to give you peace, not only at Christmas, but peace all the time. We're so afraid of our past. Jesus says, I got this. I got your past. I know what you've done. I know how you've been. Guess what? I love you anyway. Come sit in the front row. Be with me, because I want to be with you. He's also got your present. Right now, I'm struggling with the loss of my food. You're struggling with something. He's got that too. He wants to be your present. And someday in the future, when you're struggling with something else, He's got that too. You know how I know that? Because He's got my past and He's got my present, so He's going to have my future as well. Do I get it all the time? No, I don't. Do I understand it? No, I don't. Do I always live in this? No, I don't. And I got to be honest with you. I'm a work in progress. I struggle with some of this stuff. There's one thing I need you to know. As your pastor, even though I don't fully understand it myself, I passionately want you to try to understand it as well. You're the people of my flock. I care about you. And I watch so many of you live without peace when Jesus says you can have it. You ever tried to push wet spaghetti on a countertop? Can't do it. It's all watered up into a matted mess and gets all in the grooves of your fingers. So much of my time as your pastor, I've been trying to push you like wet spaghetti. And it's not working. So I want to try to lead you in a different way. I want to try to pull you instead. The only way I know to do that is to try to be the best example I can. May not be the best example on the planet. I'm all you got at this point. But what I do know is that what Jesus is doing for me in relation to my hunger for food and the grief of my food, if He'll do that for me, and if I can be successful in this through Him, not anything I'm doing, but if I can be successful in this through Him, then that can be a sign to you that you can be successful in whatever you're going through.
Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to speak with someone about how you can apply this week's message to your life, please call the church office at 281-922-5520. You can find more information about East Haven by visiting easthavenchurch.org. Remember, as you go, to live as God's people, telling God's story, building God's kingdom.